Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 236. Tonight's show is brought to you by... Yeah, and that will not be explained. I'll tell you about my week, and what I've been doing is I rode some bikes. Went out on... I had a weird weekend. My schedule changed, so I normally work 4 on, 3 off. And with my schedule change, I worked 4 on, 4 off, 4 on. So normally I wouldn't work tomorrow, but today I do. That's how it'd be. What we're going to do is talk about what I did, and that means I honestly have no clue what I did on Friday. I just flat out can't remember. Saturday, I went out and did some trail work for some moto trail. Just went out with some hand loppers and a handsaw and took care of some things and reported to the local moto group that, yo, there's 3 trees to chainsaw and this thing's ready to rip, and that was pretty cool. Then the next day, I went out with a bunch of friends, old, middle, and new, and we rode the entire Salida Enduro, and that was a whole ass day of riding. Turns out if you ride a full day Enduro and you stop and look at stuff and discuss lines and talk about things, that it takes...
And do the 4,000 feet of climbing.
Yeah, 21 miles with 3,800 feet of climbing, and you're trying to... You know, I was the only power meter in the group, and the first time on the way up, I was like, I'm not pedaling any harder than this all day. And no joke, like 173 yards later, it was like, you're pedaling too fucking hard. And then later, it was funny, because I was like, I'm pedaling twice as hard as I said. I'm not pedaling any harder than this now. We got to go slow so we can... You start slow and taper off, you know? So that was a lot of fun, except for the step where I showed up, I got all my stuff ready, I put on sunscreen, and then I decided I was hot, and I swapped my pants for shorts, and I did not apply sunscreen to my legs, and I lobstered myself.
He looked like he had lobster legs. It was...
I did.
Kind of sad. It was like a little past funny to sad.
Yep. So that happened, and then I don't know what I did on Monday. I don't remember.
Not a lot. You were tired.
Oh, that's right. I was real tired. And then I just worked this week. Didn't get any after work rides in. Just been a little busy being an adult. And then tonight after work, I sold my stump jumper, put some American currency into my pocket. And yeah, that was that. So in case anyone out there is listening, I'm going to run through the things that you can buy from me, because I still want to reduce the amount of things that I own. Extra large Jaffe frame or complete bike. Work out either one. Large Canyon World Cup with transmission and carbon wheels. Make you a great deal.
That thing's fucking light.
That thing is fucking light. It's a large with a dropper post, and it's, I think, like 24.9 or 25.3. It's pretty fucking dope. I have a Crave I'm going to sell. That'll be sold single speed. I have a... What's the other bike that I want to sell?
Your fat bike?
Yeah, the fat bike. Fat bike can go. Fat bike, I don't know. It's whatever. Got a Notso. You don't want it. No one wants it, obviously. It's been for sale for 2 years. I can't sell it. So, a carbon bike with carbon wheels, an Eagle that
it's
won't sell.
It's like one of the nicer fat bikes out there, honestly. Like,
yeah, but...
That's why I'm holding on to mine. Like, I rode it once in the past 2 years.
Yeah.
And, like, it was, like, the fact that I just keep it around, because when I don't have a fat bike, I'm like, there will be once a year that I'm like, hey, I wish I had a fat bike. So I just keep it, because it's like my hardtail. Like, yeah, I don't ride it that much, but I don't want to replace it. And every now and then, I might want to ride it. So I'm just going to keep it, because it's never going to get, like, hardtails and fat bikes aren't going to get better than, I don't know, the Otso Boytech is an awesome fat bike, and the Spot Rocker is a really awesome carbon hardtail that you can do single speed. Why the fuck would I get rid of it? Either one of them. But, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. No, that was all I had. I'm trying to think if there's anything else of note. Oh, I got a Stans mullet wheel set, too. Some Flows laced to Stans hubs. Under 250 miles on them.
When did you get those?
They were on the Levo.
Oh, okay.
So those need to go away. And I have a, yeah, that's it. I think that kind of rounds out all the stuff that I need to get rid of. So someone else should go. It's Kenny's turn.
Let's see. I did a camping trip. Rode a whole shitload of moto. It was pretty dope. Went out to Woodside with three other people. Bunch of gas people. And it was really freaking cool. Went out on Saturday, kind of in the afternoon, with another dude who got down there kind of early. And I'd been scoping out this one camp spot for a couple of years now. Just didn't really have a reason to camp out there.
Where was it?
But it's off the beaten path a little bit. It is in Woodside, which is off of Highway 6.
Okay.
In the Swale area. And yeah, just really cool spot. The single track moto trail goes by it and just looked like a really cool spot. It's got a little bit of a gnarly road leading up to it, and there's a gate you got to open. So I think it keeps out a lot of van lifer people, which is probably a good thing.
I have the same sort of spot. When I talk later, I'll tell about Leadville.
Yeah. So anyway, always wanted to camp there. So convinced everybody that that would be a cool spot, but it was a little bit unknown. I didn't like really scope it out, but I knew there were like some flat spots. And surprisingly enough, you drive up a ridge, and usually ridges out there are crazy windy, and I was worried about that. But the couple times I went up there, it was kind of breezy out that day, and I was up at the top, and it was like less windy, which makes no sense whatsoever. It turns out that, yeah, it's really shielded from the wind. It was a nice day anyway, but it was like 0 mile an hour wind up there, which is really cool for camping and campfires and all the things. Yeah, so yeah, I rode a little bit with the other dude who was out there who I hadn't met before. Rode with him on Saturday a little bit, and he's a super good rider, way better than I am. He races a little bit, so definitely a kind of a hard enduro guy. But yeah, super nice, and was happy to do kind of the stuff that I wanted to do and set up camp. Other people showed up, just hung out, and then woke up and did a nice big loop with the four boys. It was fun. Everyone had a pretty good time. No major incidents or anything. My moto was great. People did some rowdy shit. I watched. Yeah.
Did you ride Husky or the?
I was on the Husky. Right. Yeah, because we did a pretty big loop. I've mostly been riding the Husky these days as I just get more used to it and comfortable with it and all that kind of stuff. And it's been great. It's a really good motorcycle. I got 4,000 miles on it now, pretty much all single track, a little bit of road in the beginning days as I was just trying to see how much of a dual sport it would really be. 160 hours, 4,000 miles, and not a single hiccup. It's a perfect bike. It's expensive, and you got to do a lot of shit to it to make it that way. But it's, yeah, I mean, I guess turns out nice stuff is nice.
Yep. Nice stuff is definitely nice.
So anyway, had a really good time. It was just a fun trip, really good riding. The camping was ideal. It was probably 70 degrees, but very direct sunlight, maybe 75 during the day. So it got a little hot while we were riding. Definitely a lot of sun out there. It's just how it is in Utah. But at night, it probably went down to like upper 30s, which is pretty standard. And I just cowboy camped in the back of the Ridgey.
No mice on your face.
No, I don't think anything's going to get up there. Yeah. But it was fine. It was super, super nice out. I did finally get my tent that arrived the other day, so I'll try it out in the future. But it's just a bed tent, nothing fancy. It's like $200.
Like a truck bed
tent? So we'll
see
how that works. A truck bed tent. Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah. I mean, it's for as often as I camp, which is probably, I don't know, we'll call it 5 times a year-ish, maybe more. I think it's going to be good. And it's better than being in a ball inside the truck. But just cowboy camping on the bed was fine. The problem is, if it's even like breezy or rains a little bit or whatever it might be, you definitely don't want to just be sitting in the bed on a regular memory foam like trifold mattress, because it would be a disaster.
Well, yeah.
But I knew it was going to be super nice out.
I think a lot of like that, and like you were talking about wind, people don't realize, like, you don't, well, I say people, like, I didn't realize that. You probably didn't before you moved out west, that like wind is a fucking thing. Yeah, like it can be really nice, like bluebird, clear sky, and then you go to sleep, and then just in the middle of the night sometime it'll just rain for like half an hour. And then stop.
And it's not as big of a deal in Utah, definitely Colorado, like you're gonna get guardrail to guardrail weather. That doesn't happen that often, especially in the places that I usually choose to camp, which is typically kind of that swell area. So I'm not doing like high alpine camping and stuff. So it's usually, you know exactly what you're going to get. You just check the forecast and you'll have days where it's windy for, I don't know, 2 days straight of 30 mile an hour wind, but you know that going into it. But anyway, I got really lucky. It was super nice out, just chilled in the back of the truck. And then, yeah, we had a great day of riding on Sunday, cooked a bunch of good food, made a big old campfire. We forgot to bring these, so we couldn't do any fire bombs. So we'll have to do that in the future. But other than that, it was just a good old...
Like a 40?
Oh, well, are you asking what a 40 is?
I know what a 40 is. I don't know what a fire bomb is.
Ah, okay. Well, this is everybody's homework. You really want to do this like in the desert. Don't do this like in the woods, but build a big ass campfire and get that bitch like super hot. So after like hour four of you putting on like whole trees.
So she's humming.
You got this nice campfire going and it's got a serious ass bed of coals. They're just gnarly ass bed of coals.
Okay.
And then carve you out a little crotch in there where you can like stick a 40. And you're gonna fill said 40 up with gasoline. It's gonna sound sketchy. Just trust me. It's fine. You're gonna be fine.
Jesus Christ.
You're talking about putting gasoline inside of a glass container, correct?
Wait, do you poke a hole in the lid?
Don't be scared. Yes. So what you're gonna do is you're going to bore the smallest fuel injector size hole that you can in that screw-on metal 40 top. It's very important.
So
that
it needs to be a
Mickey's. It's metal. I mean, any 40 pretty much has a screw-on lid. So use your knife and just, you know, bore a little nice circular, less than 1 millimeter hole, like half a millimeter, basically just until you can see light through that thing. Really, really tiny pinpoint hole in the middle of that thing. Fill it with gas. And you're going to be scared because you're holding a big old 40-ounce thing of gasoline and you're putting it in the hottest fire you've ever seen in your life. But you're just going to have to trust me on this. And what it's going to do is
Hold on. My legal advisor.
This is for entertainment purposes only. Do not try this at home.
This is not instructional information. This is satirical science fiction.
It's hypothetical. I've never done it. So what it does is it boils the gasoline, but it does have a place to go. Like the pressure does have a place to go, but it stays like pretty high pressure the whole time. So it shoots a like literally fuel injector nozzle straight up in the air because you're pointing it straight up.
Not
and it probably shoots a flame. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it shoots a flame probably, you know, it's like 10 or 20 feet high. But really, really narrow. And it'll do that.
It might do that. Like, it might. Science says that this might happen.
That's correct.
Hypothetically.
And it'll do that for a solid 1 to 2 minutes. And it sounds like a jet engine. And it's very entertaining. Sometimes the glass bottle explodes. It can happen. It doesn't usually happen. Usually what happens is, for some reason, the physics behind this, it just works.
It melts a hole in the lid and it just goes blah.
The lid will either melt or just blow off. But usually when there's only a tiny bit of gasoline left on the bottom, but now it's like ultra freaking hot and all vaporized, and it will just blow a final fireball straight out the top.
So it's like,
so if you do everything right, exactly. So it goes jet engine for 2 minutes. And then it'll explode the top off. And
When this is happening, hypothetically, how far away from the fire should you stand if you were to not try this at home?
More than 2 feet.
You can stand as close as you want. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'd recommend that you don't be like maybe right next to it. I'd probably back up a few feet. Because, yeah, if it does go wrong, I'd say maybe 1 in 50, you're going to get a glass bottle break. But it's usually just, you know, some gasoline goes on the fire. It's fine. That's probably how you started your fire anyway.
And if you're in Colorado, don't start a fucking fire, okay? Because that fire is going to get way fucking bigger than what you want it to be. Look, right now, because there's been no rain.
Right now, you shouldn't light a fucking one-hitter outside.
Yeah, like, there have literally been... We've been under, like, fire bans where it is... I mean, the law for the fire ban, like a stage 2 fire ban... You don't smoke a cigarette unless you're on a hard surface like concrete.
Well, I did check. There were no fire bans in Utah. There were some last year, but so far, not in Utah. And we are also literally in the middle of the swell in the desert surrounded by sand and rocks. There's like a little bush tree every once in a while.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's it. Give people context of where I am.
Yeah, like right now, if you made like a survival fire, like if you were too cold and you needed to make like a, I don't know, a pot sized fire, you could light an entire fucking forest on fire right now. Like in Colorado, it's so fucking dry.
Yeah, we could all use some rain. That would be really cool. But anyway, that's our camping stuff. It was a good time. Motorcycles are neat. My EXT front fork is being revalved as we speak. So when that gets back, I can report if that fixed my couple little issues I had with that fork. And what else? I put some new grips on the bike because I wore them out. It's finally time to do my first chain on the old Kinevo SL. So I got one of the last XO1 chains before the world ends.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But anyway, that's it.
All right. Well, my week hasn't been all that exciting. Let's see. I talked about working in Leadville. Yeah, you were talking about like a somewhat selective camping spot.
Oh, wait. I worked on bikes this weekend, too. And I put the 3-0 motos back on Andrea's bike and washed it for her. Put new tires on it. Ultrasonic cleaned her chain, put some fancy lube on it.
Oh yeah, he pimped my e-bike out.
Thing was haggard.
What kind of fancy lube did you put on there? Did you wax it?
No, I did not wax it.
But didn't you put the Silka wax lube on it?
You put the super secret chain wax lube on there?
Nope.
What'd you put on there?
I put the Silka Synergetic oil-based lube on.
Oh, okay.
So
it was very smooth, but I think a lot of that had to do with the new cassette.
New cassette, new chain. The thing I want to say there is people like to get really pissed off that I say waxing your chain is a waste of time. That's fine. That's my opinion. My opinion is I don't want those marginal gains. However, I did realize that if I was going to be a dick and say I'm going to use regular lube because waxing your chain is kind of a scam.
It's a very large time trade-off for the amount of marginal gains you get, I think is the more objective way to put it.
Also, when dudes that are sponsored by Silka claim they needed to add squirt lube to the chain in the middle of their FKT white rim attempt, which is 104 miles, I don't think I want to have to re-wax my chain every 104 miles in the dusty conditions I live in. However, I did purchase Silka's Synergetic Lube because it's the fastest oil-based lube on the market by third-party testing. So, there you have it.
All right. Well, so you were talking about selective camp spots. There's the spot where I always go camp outside of Leadville anytime I work there is pretty easy to get into, like if you have a van. The further you go off of the highway, it has a few, like, not even difficult spots, but just kind of low clearance trees and then like a few rocks. And like right now there's like a few patches of snow because it's Leadville. It's 10,000 feet. And if there's precipitation right now, it generally falls as snow. And yeah, so like that's where I go camp, but I always make sure that I go past because like, I don't know, for the most part, like the van life people, they aren't too obnoxious to camp around, but yeah, there's generally like some people that want to have like, I don't know, music and a big campfire. And I don't really, you know, when I work.
Yeah, or like firebombs or something. Fucking
yeah,
assholes.
Yeah. Like when I go there, like I'm pretty much, I work until it's almost dark. And then I go to my camp spot and I just like make dinner and go to sleep. You know, it's like 9 to 10 usually when I go to bed. So like, I don't want someone who's like wants to stay up and like kind of party and have a few drinks and not even get rowdy, but just, you know, make a little bit more noise. So yeah, I always go to like this. I have a few spots, like 2 or 3 spots where I can go that are slightly more difficult to get to where like, you know, I can get there in 2-wheel drive, but I might put it in 4-wheel drive. If there's like a little mud or some snow or something. So yeah, like selective camp spots are really nice because they generally weed out the people that might keep you awake if you've been working all fucking day in a bike shop and you just want to like eat dinner and go to bed. So yeah, I have a good appreciation for those spots. But yeah, so yeah, last week I worked in Leadville. This when I got back, I went for an e-bike ride. I actually rode a couple of hours and it was probably a little more like my left hand is still just, it's a little tender from surgery. And it was, well, first, like, so I rode up this forest road kind of close to us and rode a little section of trail and then rode back down and rode back to the house. So it was mostly gravel road, kind of a long climb up. It took like an hour to climb up. I didn't go like full power because I kind of like to, don't know, I like to pedal some and be a little bit tired. And when I got on the trail, at first, I was like, fuck, I like can't go that fast because I'm not super comfortable on the e-bike all the time descending, because the trail is mostly downhill from like the section where I got on to where I left the trail is like mostly downhill. And I realized that like the sunglasses I was wearing were really, they're like really fucked up and like scratched up. And I took those off. I was like, oh, I can see now, so I can go a little faster. And I realized that the fork, I have the Lyric Ultimate on my e-bike. And I realized that like, it doesn't, like my hands were really uncomfortable, especially like my left hand was super uncomfortable and like getting kind of beat up. And then I realized once I took the glasses off and I could go a little faster, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot this fork like doesn't really work when you're going really slow. But then once you go fast, it's like a lot smoother and actually works like a fork should, because it's, you know, it's like an enduro type fork, or almost enduro fork. So yeah, like it was kind of funny because I went from going like really slow and kind of picking my way through all these rocks to just kind of like plowing through everything and actually feeling a lot better. So that was fun. And then let's see, I did some yard work for my neighbor, and we've got, so here in Salida, you might have seen that, like, especially anyone who's listening who's like kind of out in the Colorado area, there's a guy in town, young guy, that went out turkey hunting close to Salida, and he just went missing. Like, he was supposed to have an appointment in town later in the day after he, you know, he like went out to hunt and was supposed to be at this appointment, and then he just never showed up, and he's still missing. So I went out for a couple of days and hiked. I don't know, like I tried to think, like, he didn't have a, like, his phone was in his truck and it was dead. And I was like, well, that's how most people like look at a map or something. And so he didn't have a way to navigate. It's like, well, what would I do if I was like all the way fucking lost and I didn't really know how to get back to my truck? Like, what would I do? I'd probably just go downhill until I got to like the highway. But the highway's like, it's like you think you're a lot closer than what you are because you drive up. So I don't know, maybe like he was just following a creek down towards the highway. And so I went and like I hiked up. I took a couple of days and like hiked around in this area where, I don't know, it's kind of close to where he started. And I like hiked basically over 2 days, like hiked from the highway up to towards like, you know, where the search and rescue people were really like concentrating their efforts. And I didn't find anything, but yeah, that's what I did for a couple of days. And it's just a sad situation because his dad's like a customer at the shop where I used to work. And yeah, he's a really nice dude. And yeah, so I'm kind of bummed about that, but yeah, they're still like trying real hard to find the guy. But other than that,
that's crazy.
Yeah, it sucks. Like, I don't know, like people in the area are pretty familiar with that zone. So
how experienced was this person? Do you know?
Very.
Yeah. He's like, he's grown up here. So like he should really.
Oh, okay. So it's not like someone that was unprepared and they like got caught out and then got turned around.
He was like unprepared because it was just going to be like a short trip. They said like he just went out with like minimal gear and no phone, and like he didn't have a way to contact anyone. So yeah, like he went out pretty unprepared. Like he wasn't prepared to like spend the night out there. I mean, like my theory is there's moose in the area. I saw a ton of moose sign when I was out there, and moose can be, yeah, like all these people on the internet are like, oh, I bet a mountain lion got him or something. It's like if you're sneaking around in the woods trying to find turkeys in that area, like you could definitely run across a moose.
In general, like, yeah, it seems to me that a moose is way more dangerous than a mountain lion.
They are. Because, like, mountain lions, even
mountain lions really don't want to, like, they don't want to mess with people typically, right?
They don't. Usually they don't. Like, most of the time, and occasionally they do. But you're way more likely. And it's statistically, it's proven. Like, in Colorado, you're way more likely to get run over and trampled by a moose than you are to even see a mountain lion. So yeah, like that would be my guess, is either he ran across a moose or he had some kind of mishap and his gun fired and like he shot himself accidentally. Like it's probably something like that. But I don't know. We've had a couple of really cold nights, like where it would have been where he was, like probably around, I don't know, single digits to like 10 degrees. And if he was unprepared, like, I don't know, it wouldn't end well. So I just realistically, he's probably not still alive, but I hope he is because, you know, it's just a sad situation. But yeah, always, you know, even short trips, take all the shit with you. Yeah, like, I don't know. I'm not trying to, like, I don't know, criticize that guy because I've definitely done that where I'm like, yeah, this is short. I'm just going to go out with, like, minimal gear. But, you know, shit can happen out there, you know? Take an extra layer, extra food, whatever. But it just makes you, like, think that you got to be prepared when you go out in the woods.
Be prepared. Yeah, it's a bummer. He's a fishing and hunting guide, and it was supposed to be a 2-hour jaunt, and it's 8 days later.
Yep. Sorry to be a downer.
All right, new shit.
Sorry.
Let's start by being... Just going to get this out of the way and pay the Wolftooth tax. Wolftooth is making Envy hubs. That's the only way to put it. They're licensing Envy's axles and free hub, and they are going to make hubs, and they're going to come in colors. We don't have pricing yet, but... There you have it. Next up, let's see. All over overalls are...
Why would you ride a bike in overalls?
That
just looks like some hipster shit. Like, you just want to be weird.
I'm going to say, begrudgingly, you shouldn't buy these.
You think?
The fabric feels terrible.
Oh, have you actually felt it?
Oh, yeah. I've touched these.
Oh, okay.
They're based in Salida.
Oh, is that the people that had clothes at the bike shop? And I, like... tried some shorts on or something?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
No, that was something different. But okay. The material just doesn't...
Stretchy?
They found a way to make something that is really stretchy, but very bulky and odd feeling, while not seeming like they're too thick to be breathable, and they're too thin to be durable. Like,
that's unfortunate.
Like, this material is too thick to ride a bike in and too thin to roll around on the ground in under your car. So, I'm not trying to be, like, ugly, but if you want to purchase these, I would make sure where you purchase them has a good return policy because they might not meet your needs. Yeah. Now to shit on something really hard. Project... limited edition square tapered cranks because I want a square.
I wasn't even gonna like mention those because it was so dumb. Because
I want a square tapered crank with an 8-bolt chainring. You know what has an 8-bolt chainring and wasn't limited to a production run of 50?
Dub cranks,
a GX dub crank, or a SRAM 90 crank, or an XO aluminum.
Wait, can
crank.
You still get like the White Industries square taper?
You can.
Okay, I was just wondering if they were trying to replace that for like the 12 people that want that.
No, you just should just don't buy these. Just don't. If your bike needs square taper cranks,
no bike needs square taper cranks.
Some people want them. Let's see. Buy a set of Dotex, DOTEK. They're $30 on fucking eBay.
You know what's a sick crank?
The
S200.
Okay. Then buy that one.
But I'm not sure what it is.
I'm pretty sure you do know what it is, Kenny. It's a 52 millimeter chainline dub crank. Like, it's really not that hard, man.
I'll only be cranky about this for the next 10 shows.
At
least.
And then 2 years from now, I can't wait until you just don't give a shit anymore because it doesn't matter.
I should make it the longest running thing. Just out of spite.
No, I think you should stick with, like, ceramic bearings.
We'll see.
Golly, now I want a set of these.
Why?
If I told you, you wouldn't like the answer.
All right, don't tell me then. Kenda released a new cross-country tire.
Who?
Kenda. It comes in 32. It's cool. The new Dagger cross-country race day speed trail control and comes in 32. Yeah, it sits between their... Rush and the Karma 2, which I don't even know what the fuck those two look like, but I don't know. I mean, it looks fine. It has about as many knobs as like a Recon is what it looks like as far as height and number of knobs. And yeah, I haven't found a weight yet.
Please never compare anything Kenda makes to the best tire on the planet, the Maxxis Recon. Just please don't.
I mean, I'd try a pair if they sent a pair to me.
What would you do? Put them on your e-bike and then just hit your face on the ground?
Probably.
Okay, cool.
I could put them on the hardtail.
You don't even own 29er wheels for that bike.
Yeah, that's true. I just steal a pair of yours. Don't give me that look. They are relatively, they are a competitive weight. 125 grams in the cross-country version and 810 grams in the trail version.
Okay.
Priced at $80 to $90.
Okay. What else are we going to talk about?
The Levo Suron.
What is that?
I don't know. I'm looking if there's other info on it.
Is it actually called the Levo Suron?
No, I'm calling it the Levo Suron. I'm wondering if there's...
Is it...
I don't
know
if there's a name.
A Levo, or are you talking about a Suron?
No, it's a Levo with a Suron back end.
Kenny, let's pause for a second.
Yep. Here, I'll send you this link through the old Googler. Where's the old chat? There's the chat.
Did you find a model name yet?
No. You got to scroll down a little ways. You'll see it.
Jesus Christ.
What the fuck is that?
What's actually freaking sick is that it's got a functional dropper and you could like bring it up to pedal it. I think I love it, maybe.
I'm trying to figure out what the fuck is happening. So they attach like a frame.
There's like a little subframe that attaches to the back.
So it's so mounted like hang to shit the off suspension of pivots.
So it's static with the front end.
Yeah, static with the front end. Exactly.
There's nothing I've hated more than this.
I think it might be awesome.
I've never seen anything that made me more angry.
Oh, wait. Look at the front rack on that, though.
Yeah, they clamped it to the fucking dual crown.
That's amazing.
Yeah, why not? You're not using that part of the stanchions.
What the fuck is that saddle?
That's not a saddle. That's a seat. Okay. That's a fucking seat.
That is a seat. I agree. I think it's freaking
and
sick.
Why is it so narrow if they're going to put that
so you can
shit
still pedal it because it doesn't have a throttle. This is something that I really want to bring up. I rode an e-bike this
what
week
is it this time
at the shop, and it was a 6,000 watt e-bike. It had no pedal assist. It was all throttle. It was barely a bicycle. And everyone was like, oh my God, it's so fast, it's so fast, it's so fast. And I did a bunch of math. That system, me and the bike, makes about 1 horsepower for every 32 pounds of system weight. My KTM is under 10 pounds per horsepower. It wasn't fast. They're like, oh, if you're not careful, it'll lift the front wheel. No, it wouldn't. I snapped the throttle at like in full biscuits mode, and it just...
It scrubbed it best.
For everyone out there that sees something like this and is like, that's what I need, buy a fucking motorcycle. Just...
Well, I agree with that because like buying these weird bicycle contraption things, they're going to explode and they're hugely compromised. Like at least just go buy an e-moto. And you want an e-moto that you really don't have to mess with, just go buy an Ultra B. They're like pretty dope for most people and they don't have all the drawbacks of the light B that runs bicycle parts, right? Like bicycle parts don't belong on motorcycles. They just don't. I've tried it. It kind of works, but not very well.
Yeah, just buy a motorcycle.
All right. Kenny, have you seen the new Tektro brakes?
We mentioned them on the last show,
about
I think.
Them already.
I think people got cranky.
I got cranky. I don't know why anyone would buy a cheaper TRP brake. The fancy ones don't work, so I don't know.
Oh, come on. My brakes are phenomenal.
Oh, your brakes that get ridden once a month are good? Great. What about my fleet of rental bikes?
I had them on my Levo SL too.
What about my fleet of rental bikes where you ride one, someone takes one out, and then the next day you pull it down and it just doesn't fucking work anymore?
That's a bummer.
And you bleed it, and you bleed it, and you bleed it, and it feels great. And then, like, you start cleaning up your tools, and you squeeze it one more time, and it just suddenly fell on its face again.
I had that exact experience.
Which model are they?
It doesn't matter. It's their fucking TRP.
It does matter.
They're more expensive than these TRPs because these didn't exist then. So if the good ones aren't, like, if there's good, better, best, if better didn't do well, good's probably shit.
I don't know. I mean, my little anecdotal experience have been pretty good. My brother's got I don't know. He's probably 1,500 miles on his. He's got they're not the DHR Evos. They're like the one model down from that actually. It has a different master cylinder. So they're like firmer at the lever. But anyway, they have been great. Are they called DHR Trail maybe? Anyway.
I don't know.
They've been awesome. And I've had two sets. And I did have a bad caliper, brand new. It was dead out of the box.
So like, you mean where I've had a pretty high failure rate where we're building up these bikes that we want to put into our rental fleet and then they just don't fucking work? Or you're building up a new special order bike and it just doesn't fucking work? Yeah, it's cute. It's the cutest thing in the world.
Shoot, call TRP. Let them handle that shit.
I do. You know what's awesome? When you don't have to call anybody and their shit just works.
Yeah. I haven't seen any of those.
Well,
I'd say probably out of the box, 75% of Mavens are broken.
Okay. That's not been our experience, so.
That's been our experience. They'll just pull to the fucking bar. Brand new bike. So we're like flushing brakes on brand new bikes. All brakes suck, is what we're saying.
You know what doesn't suck? My G2s. My G2s fucking rip.
Yeah, I've got...
G2s have been pretty good. And then they took them away from us. Like, they took away GX.
Yeah, like, I took the... I've got the codes.
Kenny?
I've got the codes on my e-bike. You know what they do? I pull on them and they fucking slow down and they feel good because they've got the car sauce in them.
I can feel your anger through the microphone, Matt. What do you have to say?
I'm just so, I don't understand why this matters to you. And like, I don't know if you understand the number of hours that I've spent since you first said this, where I'm like putting away new SRAM product that's an S series. And I'm like, I just don't know why Kenny's so upset. It just boggles my mind. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just stupid.
With a T.
Maybe it's a me problem. The gajillion dollar a year company definitely got it wrong. And yeah.
All right.
Some of the stuff that's supposedly going to be the same is a little cheaper. So that could be a positive. I'm trying to be positive here. I'll tell you what, I'll order a bunch of the shit and I'll mess with it and maybe it's decent, but just seems weird. Like, honestly, like, not trying to be funny anymore. It's just weird that they would take all those resources and do all this stuff and not just like put that into something else. Like, why not just let your existing lines run? And maybe there's a reason why. Maybe these are made in a different place or they're made in a different plant and now is the time to like intentionally make it different, or like shit's getting worn out. I don't know. I'd really like to know the backstory on why they did it.
I have no inside information, but I really think it comes down to two things. And I know that you are cranky about it, and I know that people are going to be a little confused. Except when we get a year down the road or 2 years down the road, because right now I have a GX aluminum bike that cost X. And I have a different GX aluminum bike that is considerably less than X. And one of them has, you know, a Pike base and GX transmission. And the other one has a Silo and GX Eagle. But the customer just says GX and they can't understand that they're different GXs. And to me, it seems really smart to name a fundamentally different product. I understand that you would have been more you would not have been more happy if they didn't call GX transmission GX transmission. If they had called that S, so we have 70, 90, if they had called that 100 and then called XO200 and XX1500 or whatever the blah, 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 you would have lost your mind because we have this legacy of XX is the nicest, GX is the workhorse. Everything else is just a budget price. And I think it really makes sense for a GX level Eagle to be called something that's not GX because we have GX transmission that lives in a different price point as a standalone product, as well as in a different price point from an OE, like complete bike spec. And when those bikes are on your sales floor, I think it's going to be a lot easier to sell them and not have customer confusion. The other reason that they needed to change this stuff is I haven't touched a shifter yet, but my understanding is the new shifter, and I don't want a lot of hate and pushback on this, but essentially it's a transmission Eagle shifter, meaning it looks like a transmission shifter. It points the cable in the same, you know, because for the longest time, GX has pointed your cable to match your G2s or your levels or whatever not stealth routed brake lever was. And my understanding is the new 100, 200 stuff is going to align the shift cable with the brake cable. So it will be a much tidier presentation on a more budget spec bike. So,
all right, we don't need to talk about that again. We don't need any more rants.
I'm not ranting. I'm just, the number of hours I've thought about this while working is like, if Kenny's like butthole's been itching or something, it's because I'm thinking about this and thinking about him, and the universe is like letting him know. He's like, man, I took a shower.
Kenny, right, have you seen?
Well, the new Fox 34 is now called the Squirrel, and and it's just going to be called the Squirrel. And then people are going to come in and be like, oh, this has got a Fox Squirrel fork on it. And they're like, well, what's a fucking Fox Squirrel fork? And I'm like, well, it's like a 34 because it's a 34.
Like, oh, well, you mean like Marzocchi, where they make all the cheap shit under a different name and it's really confusing? No, it's not.
Yeah, it is confusing.
No, because it's a fucking Marzocchi fork, not a fucking Fox fork. It's simple.
All right, Kenny, have you seen the new Specialized S-Works Demo 11?
I have.
Do you have one in your shop, or you just saw it?
We have one on the way.
One.
We'll be here, I'm told, any minute. But I have not seen it in real life. I've definitely seen pictures of it.
Is that an e-bike?
No.
It looks like the bottom bracket area is so fat.
It's a new take on high pivot. It's a forward high pivot.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh. Yeah, like the chain ring doesn't connect to the cranks.
The chain ring.
Oh, I see that now. That's kind of wild. Oh, I want to see.
Yeah,
like
it's gonna be pretty rowdy. I think it's probably one of the cooler things that Specialized has made in a while, to be honest.
I want to see there's like the inside shot of it. So what?
There's a gearbox that connects the crank to the chain ring.
Okay, I was gonna say like what drives the chain there, because it looks like, it doesn't look like anything drives the chain, but now that I'm looking at the bottom side of it, it makes slightly more sense. That is pretty fucking cool. I mean, I would never have any use for one of these, but if someone was like, hey, you want to go ride the bike park and you can rent one of these while you're there, I'd probably just go ahead and pay the whatever it was to ride that, because it looks pretty fucking cool. I don't think a rental fleet's going to have an S-Works bike in it, but, you know, once they make the aluminum version.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be an aluminum version.
Yeah.
It's $11,000.
Well, here's
but
the thing.
But that's like the top end of fucking everything.
Well, the frame set $6,500, so
yeah,
can't get that cheap. Also,
it's 41 pounds.
It's not that heavy for a downhill bike. Right, Kenny? Am I wrong? Way off on that?
I mean, I think at under 40, but I think also the DH people realized a while ago that it doesn't matter that much how the bike weighs. It's where the weight is more important.
Yeah. And this looks like the weight would really be low.
So
of all the kind of not complicated, but like the mechanisms of in the bottom bracket area are where a lot of that weight is.
Atherton A200 built up at a race, 39 pounds. Santa Cruz V10, 38. We've got a Frameworks coming in at 41 and a half.
Yeah, so it's like normal.
They're all right at that 40 mark.
Yeah.
And then the thing is you'll see like shots where people are taping weights to their frame, so to the bottom bracket. So, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Oh, that one was 44 pounds. 44 pounds. 40.
So it's got adjustable reach. So it says it goes from size S3 through S5, and the reach is adjustable plus or minus 6 millimeters for each size. And then the bottom bracket can be adjusted by 7 millimeters. And the chain stays are size specific across three sizes. So that's pretty fucking cool. I mean, I have
it's probably going to be pretty rad.
Yeah, I've got like no use for one of these, but I can appreciate the technology that they've put into this. It's pretty fucking cool.
What you need to do is go on to specialized.com, do order for Ryder, get it sent to the store. We'll build it up and play with it, and then you can return it. I'm just kidding. Don't do that.
It's pretty crazy that the little idler, whatever you want to call it, is concentric with the crank arm.
Yeah, that's
there's like a lot of really cool details. I really do think it's probably one of the cooler things and thinking outside the box that Specialized has done in a long time. I kind of feel like Specialized is getting behind the eight ball on a lot of stuff. They don't make any bad products. Like the last, everything they've released, like the Epic is great. Like it's arguably one of the best cross country bikes, probably always will be, but they haven't really done anything crazy in a while. And I think this is this classifies as pretty crazy.
You want a conspiracy theory?
Sure.
They only made this because they have to with UCI rules.
What rule?
You can't race something you don't sell.
Like, they just made a fucking awesome downhill bike and they're like, well, I guess we got to sell a few of these so our rider can ride it in the competitions.
Yep. Like, Brembo sells the brakes so they can be ridden. So,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe, but nobody really buys any DH bikes anyway.
That's what I'm saying. But they have to, like, I don't know the numbers, even though I work for a Specialized dealer. Did they make 50?
Like with Santa Cruz, no idea. What?
I don't know.
I'm guessing it's probably in like that 200 ballpark, but maybe a little bit north of that. I know with Santa Cruz, again, very anecdotal here. But being a Santa Cruz dealer, we maybe have the option of getting one. Why am I forgetting the name of their DH bike?
V10.
The V10. Like, you can get one V10, maybe. And sometimes it just won't show up. It's insane. But nobody buys DH bikes, unfortunately. I think it's really cool, but nobody buys DH bikes. They just don't.
I feel like you'd have to live within, or you'd have to have a shop, like, within, I don't know, a half hour of a bike park.
No.
To sell a downhill bike.
The problem of downhill bikes isn't a problem with downhill bikes. The problem is enduro bikes are too good to need a downhill bike.
Yeah, and you basically, unless you have lift access or an awesome shuttle situation, what the fuck are you going to do with your DH bike?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you'd have to live someplace where someone, there are people there who only ride the bike park. Like, they literally do not ever ride anything other than the bike park, and they want this bike, or one of them wants this bike. So, yeah, you'd have to live, like, somewhere around Winter Park or Keystone and Breckenridge, and, you know, like, in Colorado at least. I don't know how many bike parks there are in Utah.
Angel Fire.
That's New Mexico.
I know, but it's close. Yeah. But, I mean, I have three customers with downhill bikes. One of them is a pretty fast junior racer. The other two, yeah, just put this together to not beat up my enduro bike at the downhill park. They have like aluminum demos, and I'm not mad about it, but they're in a much different tax bracket than I am. You know, so when I say like the reason downhill bikes aren't successful or prevalent anymore is because trail bikes don't want to kill you at the downhill park anymore, and it'd be really expensive to own both, and you don't really have to own both anymore.
No, that's very true. It's why I like the enduro motorcycles, because it's a DH bike, but it's also a cross-country bike. It's pretty insane.
Yeah, they go pretty fast uphill and pretty fast downhill, and they clear a really knobby tire. They're really good.
It's pretty wild.
All right. You want to talk about these 612 brakes?
Yeah, I mean, they're really ugly.
Yeah, they're hey.
That is an ugly brake.
It is the Cybertruck of brakes is what the comment's saying.
You can remove the lever and pass the body through an internal headset bearing.
That's kind of funny.
I mean, I guess that's cool.
Yeah, that's
like you can leave the master cylinder.
I'm not mad about that. That's all right.
Attached and yeah. Pull.
That's a cool party trick. I mean, that's probably the coolest thing about these, unfortunately.
It doesn't say if it's each or for a pair, but they're $900.
But you don't have to, but you can put them through a headset.
Do you know how many?
Yeah, but it also, it costs $900 to route a brake through a headset anyway, so I guess it pays for itself.
It doesn't, Kenny. It doesn't. God.
What's this brake called?
612.
Well, that's the brand.
Oh, my bad.
The Die Bremse. I don't know how you... D-I-E space B-R-E-M-S-E. Die Bremse. Die Breams. I don't fucking get it. Also, do you see how the lever attaches to the bar? There's like that one tiny little screw.
There's a tiny
little
clip there.
Yeah, it doesn't seem great. After messing with those other bougie... What were the bougie brakes that were on that limited edition Levo? Because we probably set up two or three of those.
It's one of those things.
Do you remember?
If you hadn't asked.
It wasn't like brake. It wasn't brake force. Damn. I'm sure I could look up this limited edition Levo. Let's see. What brakes does this thing come with? Come on. Da-da-da.
Trick stuff.
Oh, are they trick stuff? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they had like a weird fiddly system to mount to the bars, and they used like 3mm Allens that you could, as you're putting them on, they like want to strip out, and yeah, I don't know. And they were okay. Like the brakes felt okay. They were very finicky on bleed, more so than TRPs even. And they're really expensive, and they felt kind of sort of okay. I don't know.
It's also a $20,000 bike.
Just spending twice the amount of money as a super nice brake to get something that's weird and not supported.
I don't know.
But whatever. I mean, that's always going to happen at the top. That's just how it is.
I'm going to read off a bike that's probably just reading off the bike rumor headline is going to take the rest of the show. The new Extra Cycle.
There's a dog in the basket.
Omniterra. Titanium. Gearbox. Belt driven. Cargo. Adventure. Bike. Jesus, that was so many words. There's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, what would that be, adjectives?
You know, I said this like when I looked at this before we started recording, that there are like, I don't know, 50 to 100 people in the world that will see this bike and be like, holy fuck, this is exactly what I want. And those people will pay however much this bike costs. And they will be incredibly happy, and then they'll never have to make this bike again. Like, they could make one run of this bike and sell 99% of them, and they won't have to sell them again. Because, I mean, it doesn't look bad. I'm sure it's a well-built bike for what it's made for. And someone will get one of these and ride it around the fucking world. Like, literally, we'll do, like, one of those around-the-world routes. And it'll be perfect for that, but for absolutely nothing else.
Guess how much this gearbox titanium bike with 29-inch wheels and a Fox 34 weighs?
35 pounds.
42 pounds.
That was close.
It weighs as much as a Demo 11.
But yeah, like someone out there, several people out there will just be fucking excited about this. And I'm glad they're going to get the bike they've always wanted. But it's not a lot of people. The rack weight limit is about 60 pounds.
I think I'm going to have to get a custom bike built to get what I want. So, cause so many things. Okay, I do have one thing to nitpick with this.
That they say that the belt drive is low maintenance?
Oh, no. Two things then. They say it never needs lube. Ha! Gotti! That bitch is going to be squeaking like a hamster caught in a fucking toaster oven.
Yeah, I've said it a lot of times. A belt on a bike, if it's dry and dusty, it sounds like athletic shoes on a wooden gym floor. It's just squeaky. Just squeak, squeak, squeak the whole time. You can put a little bit of lube on it and it'll stop for like 10 minutes and it starts right back up again.
Yeah. No, it's a mid-tail bike and they give wheelbase, not chainstay length. Just tell me the chainstay length. I want to know the chainstay
length. Is that a fat? Like, that looks like a fat tire.
Yeah, that's a, they, I don't like it. That one, I don't, and then that's not a fat bike.
That's really weird.
Yeah. Anyways, do we want to talk about?
And they say, hold on, I got a little nitpick here. They say that the belt is quiet, never needs lubrication. It is not quiet. Never needs lubrication and lasts 2 to 3 times longer than a regular chain. I can guarantee you that a single speed chain, properly set up with a good chain line, lasts 2 to 3 times longer than the chain on your geared bike. I used to race 100-mile races single speed. Train that way, race that way. I never wore a chain out. I never had a chain that stretched past like 0.2.
I mean, for what it's worth, we still have some Niner single speed cogs.
Yeah, like single speed drivetrains do not wear because of the chain line being straight. And that's, if you set it up crooked, that your results may vary. But if you set your chain line up straight, your chain is very, very rarely going to ever wear out.
You know what will wear out on a belt drive bike? Free hub bearings.
Yeah.
Because you have to run the belt super tight.
Yeah. So like that 2 to 3 times longer, that's definitely 2 to 3 times longer than the chain on your geared bike. That is not 2 to 3 times longer than the chain on your single speed bike.
Well, but this bike's technically not single speed.
Well, it's set up like a single speed.
I know, but Nico Mullally won Sea Otter downhill on a 32.29 Mega Mullet. That's pretty cool. That's all I had to say about that one. Got any listener questions?
We just had one request.
Oh, for a chicken nugget?
Yep. This is from Tyson. Just says, chicken nugget, please. And I didn't know what that meant at first. And Matt's like, they want an update on the chickens.
One hen is broody.
I have one hen. Her name is Black Betty. And she is very, very broody. She just is sitting on some eggs. And if you reach in there to check on her, maybe like offer her a little food. Because look, when hens, I'll just go on a tangent here because everyone likes a chicken nugget. Or at least some of you do. When a hen gets broody, that means they want to hatch eggs. They will find their spot, they will make a nest, and they do not want to fucking move off of that nest. And they will growl at you, they will peck you and bite you, and they do not want to move. And they actually, like, they partially, like, starve themselves to sit on the nest. So she's on her nest, she's got maybe, I don't know, 6 or 7 eggs in there, and generally, you know, like, it's not a super high hatch rate when, you know, they're just sitting on eggs on their own. Like, if I took them all out and put them in an incubator, sure, I could, like, hatch a few more. But, like, you know, she'll just sit there, and she's got food and water within, I don't know, 12 inches of where she's sitting. And she has not touched that. And I went in there today, and I, like, offered her a handful of food and a little water, and She ate a tiny bit of it, but, you know, that's just what they do. And she'll sit there, and she will not get off of that nest much at all until there are some little peepers in there, and she'll take care of them. And yeah, it's kind of nice. Like, it's fun. Like, you know, if you just buy baby chickens, you gotta, like, keep them warm, and you have to make sure they have their food, and then you have to, like, integrate them with the rest of the chickens. And, you know, it's not really like that. If you let a hen just hatch baby chicks, you know, she shows them where the food is. She keeps them warm. They, you know, bundle up under mom when it's chilly. And then, you know, when they eventually go out with the other chickens, like, she's there to keep the other chickens from picking on them. And yeah, so it's kind of like a hands-off raising your own baby chickens thing. So we'll have a few more baby chickens here in about 2.5 weeks, hopefully. But she's in her own little separate maternity ward away from the other chickens because chickens, like, I have 6 nest boxes, and the 7 hens that I have all want to use the same one. So she's off by herself to raise her, to sit on her eggs, because otherwise the other hens will, like, try to get in there with her and lay eggs next to her, and you know, she gets upset, and sometimes eggs get smushed, and that just gets to be a big mess. And yeah, so she's off by herself, all separated, and she'll get to hatch her babies and then go out in the wild with other chickens. So there's your chicken nugget, Tyson.
There you have it. Patron time.
Before we do patrons, there is one thing that one of our patrons, longtime patron, super fan patron from Six Pack Outdoors, they are doing a race that's coming up in less than a month called the Vermejo Charcoal Burner. It is May 16th in Raton, New Mexico. They have a gravel ride. You can do 41, 64, or 97 miles. There's also a run that's a half marathon. It's a 13.1 mile run. If you are interested in either of these, I suggest you go to charcoalburnergravel.com. and check it out. And they do have a really nice prize purse for the top 5 women and men in the long gravel race in the 97 mile version.
Hmm.
So, our patrons, starting at $10 per month, we have Kurt, Skunk in Your Trap, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, Burt Reynolds Crusty Stash, Zozo, Eric, Burt Reynolds Mustache, Taper Bore Pro, My Pal Dal, MTB Shenanigans,
Mike Jones,
Cam Irish One, Tennessee Zach, Green Giant, AJ, Leland, Mista Bombastic, Ride Time Extended, JC, Gordon, Josh, Fart Noises, Chipset Coffee, We Caffeinate Colorado, Ryan, Bill, Aaron 2026, brought to you by the Dirty 2-Incher. Ty, Noah, Cool Beans.
She nasty.
No, my name is Clayton. Frank the Tank, Goat Roper, Balls, ChatGPT, at $11.11 per month, Howie Do It, Patamelon Disco Ball at $14 Australian, and at $20 a month, Andrea's Hormoning Podcast, Scott, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds, Poop Wrench, and at $26.06 per month, If She's a Quivering, Her E-Bike Probably Ain't Delivering.
What?
Jeez. What the fuck?
I have seen a sticker that says my other e-bike is a vibrator.
All right. Harley at 30, Troy at 31, and Vermejo Charcoal Burner Gravel, May 16th at 50. And those are our patrons. You guys got anything else?
Nope. Shut it down.
Matt?
We done.
All right, everyone. Thank you all for listening, and good night.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along Show.
There's some shit coming out of here.